I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
A couple quick announcements before we get into Over the Rainbow.
Just a reminder that we are opening up our Patreon-only community to our Black and Indigenous listeners at no cost to increase the perspectives in those spaces and help bring in more listeners who are living with economic disparities in their day-to-day lives.
If you are a Black or Indigenous listener and would like access to our Patreon community spaces, ad-free episodes, advanced MP3s, and other digital items offered to patrons, you can go to www.bufferingthevampireslayer.com/justkeepfighting and enter your email. From there, you'll be provided with a password that you'll use for access.
Also, it's August, which means we've been in quarantine for almost half a year now. So what better time to offer a big, big sale? It's pretty much half off everything in our store. Our logo tee and Cordelia shirts are both $10. Rogue Demon Hunter tee is $15. The Fresh Brewed mug is $5. And Big Demon Energy Pin is $5. So from now until September 1st, you can go to angelontop.merchnow.com to partake in our sale. How's that, Laura?
Beautiful.
You love a sale?
You know I do. Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm Laura Zach.
And I'm Brittany Ashley. And this week we're watching Over the Rainbow. Stick around until the end for an original poem written by us through the perspective of Cordelia?
Over the Rainbow was written by Mare Smith and directed by Fred Keller. It aired on May 8th, 2001.
This is the one where Angel West, Lorne, and Gunn travel to Lorne's homeworld to look for Cordelia.
It's also the one where angels buy for sunlight.
Bye for sunlight. Okay, so I need to get into a fun fact immediately.
Oh, wow. Okay. Have you just had caffeine?
Yeah, I just had a nice coffee and me and my butthole are ready to go. So the opening scene for this episode is missing on the DVDs from Canada and the US because the previously on Angel segments led directly into the teaser for the episode and featured Angel, Wesley, and Lorne surprised to find that Cordelia has vanished into the portal. So it's them at Caritas, like looking for Cordelia in the karaoke bar and then realizing that she isn't there. And then it cuts to Cordelia being in Pylea. But instead, the version obviously that we saw on Hulu is just her being in Pylea already. Does that make any sense?
No, for sure. And I feel like there's a lot thematically that echoes the last episode. I feel like especially with the Lauren storyline, you could tell that it had a lot more to be told about that at the end of the last episode.
Definitely. Yeah.
And same with Gunn. Like, I feel like all the B stories were not resolved. And it feels like up top, they really kind of did that kind of like, they did that thing that they used to do at the beginning of the Boxcar Children book series, where they'd give like a quick two parenthetical rundown of here's the characters and here's what happened. They lived in a boxcar as kids.
So yeah, Cordelia got sucked into a new dimension, which hate when that happens. Did you notice that she abbreviated her name when she was talking to herself? That she called herself Cor?
No, but that suggests to me that maybe that's how she'd prefer to be addressed.
Yeah, like,
and I wish she had voiced that earlier.
Totally. Yeah, since everyone calls her Cordy for short, it kind of like, yeah, it was just interesting that her internal monologue had a nickname for herself that nobody else had for her. Like, do you call yourself Lore?
Sometimes I call myself La.
Whoa.
Do you call yourself Bre?
I call myself B Daddy.
So she's still in her J-Lo jumpsuit, and she, you know, up top we get the titular moment of the episode where she's pretending to be like Dorothy and seeing if that's going to work to send her back to her own dimension. Of course it doesn't. And she, you know, baby girl's trying to find the silver lining. She's noticing it's beautiful out. She loves nature until a hell beast shows up and takes off after her.
You know, it's good that they were able to repurpose that Oz werewolf costume for the hell beast.
I'm just picturing whoever worked in the costume department on these episodes, like finding that werewolf costume and just being like, maybe if we bedazzle it a little bit.
Maybe if we frost the tips, no one will notice. What do you think?
So we check back in with the guys, Lauren, Angel, and Wesley, who were there when Cordelia disappeared. And at first, Lauren is seemingly the most drunk, but it's sort of more about the implications of like this new tether to his home world than it necessarily is about Cordelia. I definitely think he's worried about her, but Angel and Wesley are dropped into a more like visceral fear space about Cordelia and her welfare. Angel immediately is being reactionary and wants to open another portal to save her, whereas Wesley thinks that Angel's being rash and they need to think this through. And this was another carryover from last episode where there's been this tension between Wesley, who was established as the new leader of Angel Investigations, and Angel kind of having to earn his way back in. And now that power is kind of starting to be inverted again in the last couple episodes, where Angel is the one who seems to have like the instinct a little bit more for fighting, and Wesley is still wanting to take things slower.
Yeah, he's wanting to do a lot of research before they make any decisions because he, you know, he doesn't really know what the consequences are. And again, like you said, Lauren is just kind of nervous that he's going to somehow get entangled in this and have to go back to his hell dimension, which he doesn't want to, or his home dimension, which is a hell dimension to him. You know how sometimes when I get high, I'm like either super chill or like super paranoid?
Are you high right now?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
On my first watch through, I was herbally infused and I was like, holy shit, what if the teaser to this episode was the hell beast just like ripping Cordelia to shreds, and the rest of the series is just Angel Investigations trying to find Cordelia, but as the audience we know she's dead. Like, yeah, sure, they take on other cases in between, but their main goal and purpose is to just find Cordelia, who is long gone.
That would be terrible.
Would it? Or would it be an incredible series?
It's just like a commentary on the futility of our goals and plans and wishes.
Yeah, like they won't get confirmation that it's actually, yeah, something that they shouldn't put their effort towards. And it's like about how, you know, maybe Angel's taking this way too personally and that he needs to snap to what his responsibility is. And by trying to find Cordelia and trying to like go after and save this person that he can't, he's actually ignoring a lot of his other responsibilities, which, you know, what's more human than that?
Yeah, truly. I mean, I feel like there have been shows that have done a version of that, like the kind of switcheroo at the end. I feel like Lost did something like this, where at the very end, sorry about Lost spoilers, cover your ears if you care about that. But they basically, I'm sure there are think pieces on this, but my recollection is it was sort of implying that maybe like everyone who was in the plane crash was like actually dead. You know, things like that where...
Or like the Rugrats theory.
Yeah, exactly. So, or sometimes I don't Ferris know if Bueller. Lost didn't really make that explicit, but I feel like there are also times when audiences project something like that onto the show, like in Rugrats. Cordelia is not demolished by the Hell Beast. I think what they were trying to do in this scene is imply that the Hell Beast turned into a sweet puppy dog when he caught up with Cordelia and really just wanted to kiss her face. But maybe they didn't want Charisma Carpenter to actually have to be licked by this character actor. And so they did this weird thing of showing like a close up of the Hell Beast actor just like licking toward the camera. And I think we were meant to like understand that he was kissing her.
Oh, that's 100% what we were meant to understand, that this was like a doggy, and that like the Hell Beasts are basically pets to this clan that lives in this hell dimension. Yeah, the guy who the Hell Beast is obeying orders to sees Cordelia and is like, "You found me a cow." And then he throws this belt rope around her, restraining her. And there's a big ol' yikes for me when Cordelia says, "You're like Hindu, right?"
Right. And I think that it was meant to be implying like, oh, she's hoping that they don't actually consume cows where she is.
Right.
And I was a little bit like, oh, is this going to be a vegan episode? Is this going to be some like vegan allegory?
Okay. I have a question for you.
I hope I have an answer.
Okay. If I got sucked through a portal into a hell dimension, would you risk your life to save me?
Is it the same scenario? Like, they're the same risks involved as in the show?
Yeah.
Would I have a Lorne?
Like,
would I have the same team? Or it's literally just me?
It would be the team, but it would be, like, Dog Laura and Gus.
What?
But, like...
Wait, instead of a powerful vampire... And like a demon nerd and someone who like knows the lay of the land where we're going. And then someone who's a really good fighter.
Dog Laura would know the lay of the land.
And Gus is the really good fighter.
Yeah.
These are my dogs, by the way, for those of my Chihuahua mixes.
Just so that you don't have to leave them behind. I'm trying to make this an easy decision for you.
No, I definitely would want to leave them behind. I would rather have them in someone's care than potentially merged into one.
Okay, fine. You have Lorne.
Yes, I would come and save you.
Cool.
Would you do the same for me?
Yeah, I'm an acts of service gal. What an ultimate service.
Oh, you know what I can see coming. You'd go into that dimension, you'd set me free, and then I wouldn't hear the end of it. You know, like next time you need a favor, you better believe he'd be flaunting that in my face.
Laura, can I borrow your truck to move? Remember that time I saved you from the hell dimension? I just feel like I could really use the help.
No, what would happen is I'd be like, yeah, for sure. Take my truck. And you'd be like, oh, you're not going to come? You're not going to come help?
It's fine. I mean, I like risked my life for you. I almost became deformed. But no, it's like totally fine.
Well, one thing that this whole alternate dimension reminded me of was like it was giving me Labyrinth vibes. It was giving me Willow vibes. Like there was something very kind of like 90s fantasy movie about the feeling of this world.
Yeah. Do you want to hear a little fun fact about the location itself?
Yes.
So the production designer, Stuart Blatt, said that he found this movie ranch with a standing set for a Tijuana town, which is also what they used for the Boxer Rebellion scenes in the episode Darla. Yeah, he says, it just so happens that the Chinese province town, which looked a lot like Mexico, also happens to look a lot like England or Pilea or any other medieval pseudo-Eurospace alternative dimension with two suns kind of world. So they added timbers to the existing clay buildings. They put thatching on the roofs and they created stalls for merchants and vendors. And Blatt also says that their animal wranglers brought in medieval chickens and goats and pigs and yaks, and all old chariots were reconstructed to create the vehicles. So they did a lot of work.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, at least they used it for three episodes. Do you remember that episode? I think it was toward the end of season one where there was that gorgeous set, like with all the crosses on all the walls.
Yeah.
And the person who
never
was
used
the
again.
Art department said it was his favorite set and then never to be seen again. It was probably like a 2-minute scene. So at least they're getting their money's worth here.
Yeah. Do you want to hear? Okay. So sorry to like do another back to back, but it relates to the series of the Pilea episodes. Fans speculated that these episodes were only because Julie Benz was unavailable to round out the Darla storyline in this season. But Tim Minear, you know, our boy, he says that the writers decided that they were weary of the Darla drama and wanted the finale to be something totally unexpected instead.
I like that. I like giving, first of all, I love a Cordelia heavy arc, but also I love giving a chance for our like core Angel Investigations peeps to reconnect in this way. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's about healing from everything that's come earlier this season.
Yeah, definitely.
And also it's really fun to get more of Lauren's backstory and get him like more into the crew.
Yeah, most certainly. And like there's so much that we learn about him that I guess we never really considered before, like learning how long he's been in LA, which is 5 years, that when he kind of just like stumbled upon a portal, which was obviously great news for him because he hated Pilea, and he ended up in this like abandoned warehouse where he ended up making Caritas. So I love that his first thought was literally, I'm going to open up a karaoke bar that skews gay here.
Yeah, and we definitely get a little bit more of the heavy queer allegory with him going into a little bit more detail about Pilea, where he's from. And again, he repeats, anecdotally, something we heard last episode, which is that there's no music there and how he would always hear music in his head, but didn't understand what it was and no one else seemed to hear it. And then when he got into this dimension, our dimension, he heard Aretha Franklin and that was it for him.
Yeah, Lorne is horny for melodies.
But it did definitely have a feeling of like a, you know, closeted gay man going to a gay club in the city for the first time.
Yeah, definitely. But there was also something like really interesting about the fact that Lauren grew up in a society where humans are basically treated like animals and aren't seen as equals. And it really shows how much he's been able to ward off that same thinking because he's such a wonderful being to everyone and he's so welcoming. Like his karaoke bar allows everyone, no matter like he allowed Lindsay in there, who is evil, especially given like where he has come from. It's such a testament to his character.
And he still has the powers that his people have of, you know, being able to sense the waves and the aura type thing. And I think, you know, it's interesting that given, like you say, the type of place that he comes from and what is normal there, it's interesting that he's almost more human in some ways than like our human characters. Like he's the most kind of tapped into humanity and all of its contradictions.
And this is the part where I'm going to put in Rob Zombie's More Human Than Human.
Perfect. So Lauren, Wes, and Angel are still trying to scheme how to reopen a portal, because first they try to just do the same thing. And Angel's like, it ran out of batteries. And it turns out he's kind of not wrong. They figure out that the hot spot that it is required to open a portal gets cold after it's used because of all the psychic energy it takes to pull someone through a portal. And so they need to find another hotspot. They also find out that there are risks involved with going through the portal. They could either end up separating and ending up in different places, or they could end up fusing together, which was an interesting thought. Wesley and Angel amalgam. Oh,
what a odd couple. The idea of them having to like live their lives with each other constantly. I mean, they would never be able to go outside, for one.
Oh, yeah. Wesley would lose a lot of his vitamin D.
Yeah.
Intake.
Yeah. And then, like, would they have to drink blood?
It would depend on where they were fused.
That does. Yeah. That does depend on that, doesn't it? Wesley can never have sex again. Probably.
Again, depends on where they're fused.
Well, I got a few ideas. Then Gunn comes in, and it's obviously the audience. We know what happened, that one of his friends died, and he looks pretty sullen. Wesley is basically just like, where were you? You're late. From what we know.
Again, Brittany with a stellar British accent.
Thank you so much. And we know Gunn as someone who isn't late. He is an incredible employee. He's very dependable. And so clearly the best thing for Wesley to have done is to like ask if everything is okay. Gunn is being brought up to speed on what's going on. And he's basically like, yeah, I'm not coming with you. If the trip is one way, like you say it is, I can't leave the people that I care about. Like, you all might be untethered to the world and like not have friends, but I do. I have a community of people that I need to protect and work with. And his last sentiment to Angel is, please find her. And then he leaves. And Lauren is like, ugh, roof stoof. But yeah, I feel the same. I'm not coming with you. Angel's mad because he wants Lauren to come along to be their guide, because none of them are familiar with this land at all.
Angel does seem upset with Lauren, but he seems to understand where Gunn's coming from.
Yeah, definitely. Angel even says that, like, he has responsibilities and people to take care of as well. I mean, like, the city of Los Angeles is technically his responsibility. You know, like, ever heard of being a champion? Ever heard of the powers that be? Ever heard of visions delivered directly to me?
But at the same time, he doesn't, like, his friends are pretty limited to who would be coming with him unless he is thinking about Buffy, you know, like.
Right.
It's a little different. Gunn, you know, has more people who he actually knows in his life. I feel like it was that moment was a little bit Angel being like, yeah, I have friends too.
Yeah, I have Kate. Oh, she left, didn't she?
Oh, but I Buffy. Oh, yeah, she's fully in another relationship.
Faith isn't coming back. I know I don't have Doyle either. Marv, what was that guy's name?
No, I've hung him upside down too many times.
Yeah, Lindsay. Oh, Lindsay left.
Darla. Oh, no, don't have Darla.
What about your? Oh, no. Spot. Oh, man.
and then everyone's like, Angel, do you ever really reflect and think maybe it's you?
Yeah. Who's the common denominator in all these people leaving, buddy?
Meanwhile, Cordy's on a spit at a market.
Yeah, she is hogtied.
And she's being like called a
pastor.
And she's called a good cow. And there's a woman who's interested in buying her and calls her skinny and ugly.
Yeah, and which also tells us that in this world, their societal beauty standards are very different from ours if they believe that Charisma Carpenter is unattractive.
Wow, Brittany. Just hitting on Charisma Carpenter right now.
No.
That would be such a roundabout way to compliment someone.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, their beauty standards must be quite different. I just saw you as like a true nerd in high school.
Yeah.
Like trying to hit on the cheerleader. I'm sorry, what? They said that you were your level of beauty was subpar. Their beauty standards must be quite different from what is considered the norm. The old woman decides to bring her back to collar her. It's really quite grotesque. They have like a basically it's like a dog collar,
yeah,
that
like
they
a shock
put on
collar.
Cordy. And she's trying to say, Cordelia's trying to say, I'm a human, I'm not a cow. And then she says, as an American, I have rights. And again, this felt like a very as a white woman, American,
yeah,
sure,
totally.
Maybe. And then in response to that, she gets a good old shock through that collar. And the woman keeps shocking her until she's forced to follow. And then as she walks by, we see another human who seems scared and is hiding. And it looks like baby girl Fred.
Yeah, she's got a little dirt on her face and she's wearing a gorgeous fishnet and she's hiding. So Lorne, when he discovers that these portals are basically like hotspots of psychic energy, he visits this office building and it appears as though the woman that he is chatting with is running a psychic hotline, which, as you remember, in the 90s and early 2000s, that psychic hotlines were a big thing.
They were. And let me just say, I would call this one because this seems legit.
Oh, I thought you were going to call this one for another reason.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. I mean, a woman who can read auras, who has an aesthetic that's similar to Faith, but seems in her personality like she got a lot more hugs. Not for me. I don't know what you mean.
Like an emotionally healthy Faith with a job?
I mean, I don't know. You know, if she went to Pilea and they called her ugly, I would have to say that means that their beauty standards are pretty different.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too.
Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
But Lauren knows her, which to me says her magic is real.
Yeah.
And this is she Aggie. Can read his aura. Aggie. And he basically wants her help finding another portal. And she's just like, sorry, man, you've got some real ugly conflict vibes coming off of you. And she won't help him, not even when he makes a fart joke.
And not even when he makes a joke about he'd rather sit through a junior high school production of Cats than go back to Pylea. It seems like she is the push that the team needs for convincing Lauren that he does need to go, because obviously with her, you know, psychic abilities, she's able to say that you have to go with them. Like, that's the only thing that is going to be able to help your friend, but also be therapeutic for you. Like, sometimes you have to go back into the trauma to move forward.
Did you get the sense that she was actually psychically seeing that Cordy's rescue depended on that, or that she was saying she wants Cordy to be rescued and therefore will only give him the information he wants if he agrees to do this, because she sees it as good for his aura and his health?
I think I saw it as like, if she's his friend, she's able to give him this advice that would likely generally come from a psychologist, but it seems like she was just emotionally intelligent enough to really pick up on it herself. But I also think that it was couched in the fact that, yes, also they don't stand a chance unless you go with them. So I think it was like a double parter.
Wow. She's really complex critical thinker. That Aggie.
Truly. Or maybe we just projected that all onto her. Who knows? So who has sexy handcuffs? Wes has sexy handcuffs.
You better believe he chose to hold back from sharing that, because the context of which it came up was imagining he and Angel cuffed together.
And then we see, I mean, not to talk about Lost twice in a episode, but we see
Daniel Day Kim.
Yeah, he is Gavin Park. It looks like he is a new lawyer at Wolfram and Hart. And it's pretty clear that their sights are set on...
they're back on their bullshit.
Yeah, they are going to try and purchase the hotel right out from under Angel, because his lease is up in 6 months, which also, I guess I didn't realize that Angel was a renter. I assumed that he bought it. But yeah, this is Daniel Day Kim, pre-Lost, pre-24, and pre-Hawaii 5-0. This is one of his first big recurring
series roles. Regular.
Yeah.
So Cordelia is mucking out a stall and thinking about Thai food and Marie Claire, and she's shocked from afar, which basically it's like, even when her owner is not right there, she's still in danger of being harmed. And she hears someone whisper, "Don't do that," when she tries to take her collar off. And there's this voice telling her that her head will implode if she tries to take the collar off.
What do you know? It's Fred. So this is the librarian from the last episode that sucked herself into this portal.
And had a lovely evening with you, if I recall.
Oh, she sure did. Yeah, we haven't talked, but I think, you know, it's like pandemic. You know, you can't really
force these
things. You
haven't heard from her for 5 years.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
She's probably
in another dimension. That's probably why she hasn't called. But she says that she's been there for so long that she sometimes thinks that she was born there. So it's clear that like she's been away from Los Angeles for so long that she has started to kind of like live in this universe and almost like losing bits of herself.
I've only been away from Los Angeles for 4 weeks and I'm already wondering if it was a fever dream.
But she's given Cordelia the details about how there's really no way out. But in the midst of telling Cordelia this, these guards come in, they find Fred, they realize that her collar was disabled, which is why she's been able to kind of like hide around and isn't under the control of someone else. And the head dude, he is clearly a part of Lauren's clan because he, you know, he's got the green, he's got the horns. And so it's possible that there's like a hierarchy among the demons or among the different clans that live in Pylea as well.
And then we cut back to Angel. And at first it seems like a lazily written scene of Angel just talking to himself about their plans to head into this other dimension. But then we realize he's leaving a voice message. And at first I assumed it was for Buffy. I guess I got Buffy on the brain.
Who doesn't?
Lauren, you know, rejoins Angel and Wes, and they have a plan now. They know from Aggie where they can find this new hotspot, which turns out to be at a film studio. And then Cordelia is back at market with her owner, and she's trying to ask questions about Fred. Like, you know, it takes a lot for Cordelia to stop talking. And the owner is experiencing that part of her now. And she ends up getting a vision in the middle of holding a bucket of viper's milk that she spills. And she shares with the villagers who gather around that one of their kind is being attacked near the forest next to a yellow rock. And unfortunately, despite this valuable intel, they interpret this vision that she has as a curse.
Yeah, it's very like, kill the witch. She's a witch.
Damn, no matter what dimension you go into, the misogyny.
The patriarchy!
Lorne and Wesley and Angel, they are ready to go into this portal. And from Wes's research, there was something about like metal and iron. So that was like something that would protect them. So they decide that Angel's convertible is the thing that will make sure that they all stay together and are all going to be intact when they arrive at Pylea. And then Gunn pops in. Something about like the 90s and early 2000s where like one voicemail could really change everything. Yeah, Lorne thinks that maybe this will absolve him and he doesn't have to go, but they're like, no, you still have to go. And then, yeah, they like drive the car into the portal and it's very Back to the Future. But
And they don't even know for sure that Angel will be okay because they don't know if they're going to go into sunlight and they have the convertible. So there's this talk of like, do we put it up? Do we put it down the top? It felt a little bit strange that they didn't just put up the top just in case, but they kind of justified it for somehow in a way that I don't quite recall. Also goes to show how willing Angel is to risk himself for Cordy at this point.
Definitely. Unfortunately, even though they make it through, the book does not make it through, which later we learn is because the book only exists in the universe of the Earth, but not the universe where Pylea is. And so they do get there successfully. And, you know, rightfully so, Angel is immediately nervous that since he's in the sunshine, he will burn. So he's like, cover me up. But no, like, even though there's two suns in the sky, they seem to not have the same effect on vampires. And as we saw last episode, he has been longing for the sun. And so this isn't like a trip to hell for him. This is actually incredibly exciting. And he's like, I'll go pick up those branches over there. Like, he's just truly a happy little baby.
And him just calling out, I'm not on fire and we're together. I just feel like that's what I'm going to say once we get through COVID.
Yeah.
And hopefully the election. Like, once those two events are behind us and if there's any sort of resolution that's not the apocalypse politically or environmentally, this is what I'm going to exclaim as well.
Yeah.
And nobody told Gunn that it was a risk that they all might merge together.
Yeah.
He was like, why didn't anyone tell me that this was a risk? And Angel, it's just so cute to see him in this state. He's like you know, oscillating between being really concerned about Cordelia and, okay, we're here now, let's get going, and just wanting to kind of play in the sun. I feel like I see him how his mother must have once seen him.
Ah, little Liam. But back to Cordelia. She is trying to convince all the villagers around her that it's not a curse, it's just visions, but they keep telling her that she's cursed with the sight, and they're going to do some tests for her. This guy who they call the priest is planning a test for her, and he has this hot poker, and I mean, I think I know where that's going. But
Brittany, no.
In her eye.
I thought I was hoping it was going to go to like be one of those Mr. X where it unlocks the collar.
Oh, smart. Well, I think that is what happened.
Oh, yeah, I am smart.
That is what happened. You know, but
you know what happens. Nah, I turned it off in the last 40 seconds.
So the guys cover up the convertible with a lot of branches that were conveniently stacked
also,
there.
How long did they waste doing that?
No kidding.
Okay, guys, everyone just pause to gather up brush to put on this car while our friend might be currently enslaved.
Yeah. But yeah, so then they realize that none of them have the book, and Angel and Wesley, both of whom believe that they are the leader, they're blaming it on the other one, saying that they should have had the book. So now, you know, as an audience member, we're wondering if they're ever going to be able to find a way back, because they don't really have any literature that tells them how. And also, apparently, no alcohol in Pylea. So no alcohol and no music.
Mm. Not a place I'd like to visit. No. I understand where Lauren's coming from.
Yeah.
And Cordelia looks very upset. She's still in the ground of the dungeon, and the tests are now complete. And basically the decision of the covenant, that the head guy of this covenant like speaks like he's talking into one of those voice changers you'd use to prank call people.
Totally.
And he's announces that the decision is that the girl is indeed afflicted. And it was interesting that he called her a girl, not a cow here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like bad news. They're dragging her across the floor. And then Lauren and the guys are heading into the market area. And Lauren warns of xenophobia in this place, which Gunn thinks to mean fear of Xena, the princess warrior. And we learn that Gunn is a Xena fan, which I do love that for him.
Yeah, definitely. But I also find it odd that like those dudes wouldn't know what, like that any of those guys wouldn't know what xenophobia means.
Yeah. And I don't love that they gave it to Gunn as being like, what's that? Yeah.
I think they just like had a joke and they're like, I guess we'll give it to Gunn.
Yeah, definitely. Someone was really proud of themselves for the Xena thing.
Yeah. So Lauren leads them to Blix's house, who was a childhood friend. And judging from the way that Lauren is setting this up, he's like, no, totally, like, we're cool. I'm just going to get some info out of him. So Lauren goes in, red suit and all, and we quickly see that it does not go well, because he's being chased out with other people from his clan, calling him a traitor and a deserter and a betrayer. And they've got to run. However, the four of them get surrounded very quickly.
And before we find out what happens when they're surrounded, would you like to enter into a little segment we know as Fuck Watch?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious who both of us are going to choose.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just cater to queer culture like this and not expect us to pick Aggie.
I know. Like, yeah, to give us an intuitive, emotionally intelligent, hot psychic.
It made me wonder. It almost felt rude, like they were dangling this character that I immediately was like, wait, where's her show?
Yeah.
Why isn't this show about her?
Yeah, why haven't we seen her before? Why is she not go to Caritas? Like, does she need any help? Like, what's going on?
And honestly, does she need any help? And honestly, I think that's how the best of a new crush feels, is you feel like,
where have you been?
Wait, how is it possible? We didn't know each other.
Yeah, I pass by this building all the time on my way to lunch. Like,
there are psychics in here? This is chock full of psychics?
Yeah.
Making calls?
Well, that was the easiest fuck watch of my life.
So the guys are surrounded by a bunch of the villagers, and Gunn is basically like, I'll take 20 on the left, you take 50 on the right. And then they engage in this massive fight, and they think they're winning, but then it cuts to them all tied up. They were overpowered. And the big bad leader that you described earlier, who definitely looks like he's related somehow to Lorne, comes up to them like riding in a stupid little horse-drawn buggy.
He's like if Lorne played football.
Yeah, if Lorne had a lot more toxic masculinity in him. And he rolls up and he's like, who are these cow scum? And Lorne explains they're humans and friends, not cow scum. The big bad dude doesn't like that. And he orders Lorne taken away for his betrayal and then kicks Angel in the face and calls him unworthy trash. Yikes. So, you know, so far it doesn't seem like this is a dimension where very many men are bi for Boreanaz.
No. Yeah, that's you know, again, with that societal beauty standards comment, it's very clear that if you aren't bi for Boreanaz, then you just have a different set of beauty standards societally. And something that I was also thinking about is, you know, usually when Angel gets hit, he turns into, he like goes into vamp face. And it's, so I'm curious if him being immune to the sun also means that he's really not able to turn here too.
Oh, have we not, did he not do vamp face the whole episode?
Well, he did in regular in LA.
But not after Pylea.
No. Not in Pylea yet.
Oh. And Gunn, on the other hand, keeps taunting the big boy. And finally, he's like, put these things away, like meaning lock them up. And in the dungeon, again, there's more kind of teasing of what's going on with Cordelia. Like it's all very ceremonial. The time has arrived. My brethren, measures must be taken. Blood must be spilled. And, you know, it's setting up that it's going to be Cordelia's blood.
Yeah. And so while Gunn and Wes and Angel are in the dungeon, there is a moment where we hear. So Wesley brings up the Tower of London. He says something like to set it up, like, oh, now I know what it was like to be in the Tower of London, or like how horrible it was. And Angel is like, eh, it's really not that bad. So it's clear that like he was a prisoner. The Tower of London was used as a prison from the years of 1100 until 1952. So at some point he had been a prisoner in the Tower of London, which is, yeah, just interesting to know about his backstory.
And Angel has, so one of his powers or his vampire qualities that he definitely does still have, TBD on the vamp face, is he still has his super hearing. And so he can listen through the door of the dungeon cell and conveniently can just hear what the plans are. He's like, all right, just give me a second. They definitely have Cordy. And oh, wait, now they're talking about us. Yeah. First of all, they're saying that they know Cordelia has visions. And now they're talking about us and they are about to do our sentencing.
And they also said that they're into Pacey and Joey and not Dawson and Joey. What do you guys think?
And they get pulled out of the dungeon and then like reunited with Lorne, who had been separated from them. I'm not sure exactly why. I guess
for interrogations.
He's from that dimension. So he's a traitor and they want to find out.
They threw the book, you know, at him.
What he knows. And when the three of them are together, it's time to be dragged into this great hall of sorts for sentencing. And they decide to try to make a break for it. And right as they do, who do they see?
Queen C.
Cordelia, I love you, Cordelia. You're perfect, Cordelia.
Cordelia in what appears to be a sparkly bikini that is made out of mirror ball shards.
Yeah, it's very
and
disco.
A crown.
Yeah.
Sitting, you know, and for a place that doesn't have any music, let alone gay music, I was surprised by the ensemble.
Yeah, this felt pretty gay. I'm curious who that designer was. But yeah, her license plate in high school was obviously omniscient, that she was able to prophesize being a queen, being Queen C.
And she says, "Hi, guys."
Classic.
Oh, love. Oh, I do love seeing her already. I mean, all she said is "Hi, guys," and I'm like, "All right, let's see more of this." Yeah. I will take this as a spinoff, and I will take Aggie and the Psychics as a spinoff.
Ooh, Aggie and the Psychics.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Angel on Top. I'm Laura Zach. You can find me on Instagram at Laura Zach or on Twitter at @la_wa.
And I'm Brittany Ashley, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brit27Ash.
You can also follow Angel on Top on Instagram and Twitter at Angel on Top Cast. And you can email us at all one word, angelontoppodcast@gmail.com.
And now please enjoy the poem for Over the Rainbow from Cordelia's perspective.
Over the Rainbow. When I tell you that karaoke bar is hardly conventional, I mean you seek journey and wind up interdimensional. My friends are gone, I'm motion sick, my heart rate's increased. Reveries on silver linings interrupted by hell beast. Mere moments in this wood and already hunter's bait. The Toto to my Dorothy tries to make me his playmate. His owner docile till his lasso's out, my day's about to worsen. Calls me cow and aims to sell me, guess he knows I'm a cat person. Indignities continue, called not just cow, but ugly too. They've not heard of rights assured me underneath red, white, and blue. So I'm sold to a nasty villager. The way she treats me is quite a shock. Literally, through a collar, tough when what I do best is talk. Mucking horse poop, longing for pad thai and magazines on vanity. Once all over, a fugitive is grasping for her final shreds of sanity. She listens to me talk of rescue and LA. She's quite enraptured, till my alarmist neighbor's warnings are cut short when she's recaptured. Will no one answer my concerns on Fred kidnapped by that big jerk? And then a vision? I'd hoped brain rest might be a portal travel perk. Despite mistreatment, I still warn them of attack, perhaps perverse, but joke's on me when they all act as if my gift is just a curse. I thought the barn was bad, but the dungeon? Further downgrade. Bring forth the instrument, is spoken. Where are my friends? I'm feeling betrayed. It's the decision of some covenant that I am indeed afflicted. Witch trials, once again, she who sees must be convicted. But then I go through wardrobe onto a throne I'm situated. Figures took a new dimension to finally feel celebrated. My team arrives a beat too late to avoid sentencing. They make a scene. Like my license plate once dictated, they can call me queen.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.